is see some wildflowers, especially when the spring is full of rain showers.
Thank you for tuning in to Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
And we created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts, and anything that we discuss that might be controversial, once you remember, they're our own opinions, and they might be different from yours.
So, one of my very favorite days is coming up soon. May 11th.
Your birthday?
No. Oh. Very close, though. May 11th is the Global Big Day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Which, the day before your birthday.
Yeah, the day before my birthday.
Early birthday present.
Exactly. Thank you, Cornell, for that. But anyways, the Global Big Day will be happening on May 11th, and that's Cornell Lab of Ornithology's eBird hosts that, and then Global Birding also tags along and does some cool things, too. Mm-hmm. So we're excited to have a team again, and we hope you'll join us. And all you need to do, and we'll post more details about this on our Facebook, and you can also email us too, but all you need to do is go birding for about 15 minutes on May 11th, submit a eBird list or more eBird lists if you'd like of the cool birds that you see wherever you're at, and just share them with our team.
Yeah. All you need to do to join our team is just share it with our team, and then you're on.
It's very easy.
Yeah, very easy.
So we hope you'll join us.
Awesome. So other interesting bird news that's going on. There's a couple rare birds. One, which is a Texas state first.
If accepted.
If accepted. I don't know why it wouldn't get accepted based on like weather conditions down south and it's normal. There's a bunch of things that are going into that kind of affect the provenance of this species, but it could show up. There's a southern lapwing hanging out in the Rio Grande Valley, and I've got my fingers crossed that it'll get accepted. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. But
I feel like people keep birds for various reasons that I don't really understand. And somebody had speculated on one of the Facebook pages that like, oh, aviculturists keep southern lapwings. And I was like, for what purposes? Yeah.
Well, maybe it is and it won't get accepted. I don't know. But that's not going to stop me from being trying to find it, since we happen to be going down. And our hotel happens to be about 5 minutes away from where this bird is being seen.
Yeah.
And we're going tomorrow. So we'll see. If it's still there, I'll take a look.
Dude, I feel like you just jinxed us right there.
Oh, absolutely. But that's what I do.
Well, there's also been a Mexican violet ear being seen at South Padre Island. So it seems like interesting things are popping up
in migration time.
Yeah, which is one of my favorite things about spring birding.
Mm-hmm.
So, another piece of news, we still have the dial-a-birder. So if you would like to call us in and, you know, ask us a question or tell us a story about all of the cool birds that you're seeing or whatever the case is, you know, just call us. And you can call us at 503-741-9306.
And we had a guest at our hotel just this last week that she was telling us that she hasn't called into the dial-a-birder yet, but she did have something she wanted to ask. Is the bird calls at the beginning and the end of the episodes, how she figures that out? And I don't know if I've mentioned it. I don't think I've mentioned it.
Hang on, I want to say something about this before you get into it.
Okay, say it.
Eric loves this section. It's probably his favorite thing about the podcast.
It's also the most stressful part.
But Eric takes so much time and effort to figure out what birds he's going to put out at the beginning and the end of the podcast. And if you paid attention, you might notice that they're different calls each time.
So, almost every time they're different.
Oh my gosh.
I don't have enough bird calls. I'm working on it, but
anyways, so this is a really special part of the podcast for him. So go ahead.
Well, slight backstory. We may have talked about this in episode 1 or 2 or 3, way back at the beginning, like 5 years ago. But when we first started the podcast, I was concerned. I didn't want to have to get into any sort of legal argument about using other people's recordings, open source, audio and, Creative Commons audio you can use, but there are still rules about how you can do things with different stuff and certain types of credits. And it was too much for us to get involved with. So we made the executive decision right off the bat that we would only use recordings that we record.
Mm-hmm.
We would record them. They would be all original recordings every time. That way we avoid any kind of murkiness in terms of that sort of stuff. So I put bird calls at the beginning of every episode and the end of every episode, and I've recorded all those bird calls, and whether with my phone or with a recorder or what, I've gone out there and gotten them in the wild. And I usually take at least a pretty little bit of care, significant care. I don't know. I pay attention to it, which specific bird call I'm using. And if it relates to the episode, we talk about that kind of bird. We talk about that family of birds, something like that.
Or that general area.
Where that bird's generally from, stuff like that. So I pay pretty close attention to that while I'm coming up with it. And I also want the bird call to be like kind of recognizable. Like I'm not going to just put a bunch of like chip calls for a sparrow. Like that would be, I have a bunch of chip calls for sparrows recorded, but I feel like that's, well, what's the point?
This is like your hidden Mickey.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for I don't usually do, because our script is not like an actual script for the episode. We put bullet points in a row. And then the conversation goes where it goes.
You're just telling people how the sausage is made.
Yeah, it's too much. But so that's all to say that while we're talking and recording the episode, I don't know what bird call I'm going to put in the intro or the outro for the episode. But I do put it in the show notes. So it's in the show notes. It usually has the bird species, where I recorded it, and usually at least a month and year that I recorded the bird species.
Yeah, so if you want to figure out what those birds are, maybe quiz yourself.
Yeah.
You can look at the show notes to see what the details are of those species.
Yeah, so it's a little hidden Mickey. Back in the back end of the sausage factory there.
So you just have so much stress about it.
I do. I do, especially when we talk about birds that I don't have any recordings of anything in the family or anything anywhere near it. And it's like, I have to put something like this. I don't know what to do. And so, yeah, it is quite a bit of agonizing that I go over that usually.
It's okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Anyway, so that's that was a comment that we had from somebody who wanted to call the dial a bird but just happened to be coming to the hotel anyways.
Yeah.
So anyways, Hannah has two other podcasts that you don't agonize so much over the bird calls that are at the beginning and end of them, right?
I mean, I kind of do at the end of Women Birders Happy Hour.
Okay.
Actually, both of them.
Oh, good. Good. So you feel my pain.
Yeah. Well, not so much. It's not as big deal.
So you have Women Birders Happy Hour, which came out last week, and Bird Nerd Book Club, which comes out next week. What was last week's Women Birders Happy Hour?
So it was with Jen Hodge, who's the San Diego Bird Festival coordinator. It was fun to chat with her about the music that she does and the cool birds that she's seen and how, you know, life has changed from moving from San Diego to Arkansas and different birds that she's seen along the way. And then with the Bird Nerd Book Club, I interviewed Jeff Allerton, who has recently put out Birds and Flowers, which is actually very, you know, fascinating book about pollination. And it was just such a funny time for it to come across my radar because we had just been asked to do a presentation on pollination and birds that pollinate. So if you're interested in birds, flowers, pollination, check that episode out. It'll be posted on April 25th.
Awesome. And then we are currently en route to Spring Chirp Bird Festival down in Weslaco, Texas, a boutique bird festival down in the Rio Grande Valley in Weslaco. We also will be going beginning of May, second-ish week of May, on a Princess cruise, on a repositioned cruise from L.A. to Vancouver, Canada. Dean Hill Woodpecker Festival at the end of May, a really cool woodpecker festival. It's bird festivals, not just woodpeckers. All sorts of greater sage grouse and other cool high desert species there. And Sisters, Oregon, May 30th to June 2nd. Amazon Expedition Brazil for Women, September, mid-September for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. That Hannah's going on that. I have think I've finally finished securing something, so I've got I'm going too.
You're going to Brazil too?
Yeah, I'm going to Brazil too.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
And then Flock to Marion Cruise. We talked about this briefly
last episode,
maybe the episode before, but super excited for this. It's Flock to Marion again. So going back to Marion as a flock on a cruise January of 2025. So lots of berths still available for that. That is now open for everyone to book, not just BirdLife South Africa membership. So if you are interested in going, definitely check it out. Check out our episode from last year. That was 2 years ago.
That
was all about, we had three episodes, two episodes, something like that. All about the Flock to Marion.
Yeah.
Great, great experience. I cannot wait to go again.
I know, me too.
And we paid full price. You know, that's the way it is. We're not getting a discount to talk about how great it was. It was a great cruise. Great pelagics, tons of albatross. So it's eight species of albatross, I think, seven species.
And my one tip, if you plan on going, pre-purchase merchandise, like, yes, if you want a shirt or anything, because when we got on the ship, we assumed that there was going to be some, like, merchandise for sale there. No, you had to pre-order that stuff.
Yeah, they didn't have space in their luggage to bring it on, so they could only bring on what had already been sold. And so they didn't have space to be able to bring on merchandise for sales. So pre-buy everything. Go contact them and have select the option for delivery at the ship or whatever the option is to deal with it. But yeah. You're going to want some of that merchandise.
Seriously.
I know. I'm really upset that we didn't think ahead and get some for the first.
Maybe we'll just, like, make some shirts.
Maybe. That sounds good.
So, we also have our Bird Nerd giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a book by Geraldine Odes Stacey, and that book is called Melusine, Birds of Many Feathers, and a couple of coloring books. And I'm excited to announce the winner is Jared, who said that... he loves the songs. There's nothing better than walking outside in the morning and hearing that cacophony of bird song. Each morning, you listen closely and try to pick out the new arrivals. What new bird has joined this beautiful symphony? That's what I love the most. And he was referring to the spring, and that was our question. What do you love most about birding in the spring?
Yeah, I could agree with that. I've been really enjoying our golden crown sparrows that just showed up.
They just showed up like one day, you know?
Well, one day, no golden crown sparrows, and 2 days ago, suddenly, boom.
Yeah, like five.
Backyard full of golden crown sparrows, and they're just singing away, and it's like, ooh, there we go.
I'm waiting for the goldfinches to just suddenly show up
I know. That's always what happens. Just boom, all of a sudden we have our thistle seed feeder is just covered, just bright yellow, covered in goldfinches.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
So another spring thing.
Spring things.
That we'd like to talk about today is about wildflowers.
Yes, it is wildflower season.
Yeah, and I've talked about it many times before that I want to see a super bloom. So it's one of those amazing phenomenas that I've heard about for many, many years, and I've always wanted to see a super bloom.
Mm-hmm.
We did do a little research into super blooms. So they are a rare desert botanical phenomenon in California and Arizona, which we do not live in either of those. So unfortunately, ours aren't technically considered super blooms up here in Oregon when we have big bloom events. But they are an unusually high proportion of wildflowers whose seeds have been dormant in desert soil, and they germinate and blossom at the same time. And this is usually associated when there's unusually wet, rainy seasons. And there are specific conditions in which a super bloom must occur or will occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the desert receives a lot of rainfall in the autumn, and that the water seeps down deep into the soil to awaken those dormant seeds as part of the seed bank. And it can't have too much water because that'll drown the poor little plants or carry them away in flash floods. But too little can lead to dehydration. So they'll start to bloom and then not get enough water and then just die. And the seeds really have to have a slow warming period over the next few months after that first soaking rain. And that needs to be done with a pretty good cloud cover that helps insulate them from too hot and too cold. So there's a lot of very specific things that go into super blooms. It's a huge buzzword that we hear in the news because it sounds really cool.
Well, because anytime there's like a lot of rain and then a bunch of flowers bloom, the news automatically refers to it as a super bloom every single time. So it's, I feel like the word is getting overused, and it's like, or maybe it's climate
more
change
frequently.
Because climate change, we have more frequent quote unquote super blooms, and they're not as impressive each time because they're blooming every single year.
Well,
but and regardless,
historically in California, these super blooms usually occur about every 10 years or so. And you're right. I have looked into it every single year since I've been aware of super blooms. Mm-hmm. Like every year I'll Google like super bloom California 2022 and it'll pop up with like where to see the super bloom. Same with 23, 24. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe we're just getting to a point where we're waiting for a mega bloom to happen. And that's
more super blooms, just mega blooms is what we're waiting.
Well, they're going to be like these huge, not just like big amounts of blooms, but big flowers too.
And like big trees. Trees will just shoot up out of the ground, out of the desert. Like the desert will just suddenly turn into a forest and they'll be like, that's a mega bloom. Everyone look. Overnight, we have a forest.
Just kidding. None of that's true.
None of that's going to happen.
But anyways, like living on the West Coast here, you know, we hear the term super bloom and it just sounds like, and you see pictures. This is, internet has ruined everything because you see these influencers that have these pictures of like beautiful dresses, you know, in the middle of this whole field of flowers. And I want to see that.
Every single time I see those, I think of like, what did they step on to get to this location?
Well, stay on the trail.
No, I know. But every time I see like an influencer like posting like pictures of themselves like way out, and it's like, you're not on the trail. You just trampled through somewhere and you took a bunch of photos and you got a million likes or whatever. And then that's now people are going to be like, oh, well, I can go to that place. And then you have 10,000 people going and trampling through to go find the one spot that influencer took a photo at.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That does happen.
The internet has made me a cynic.
Wow. Okay. Well, just to combat that a little bit, as somebody who's worked in parks that are not the most popular park, it's fun to see people out in nature.
Oh, yeah. I 100% agree. Like, on trail.
Yeah. No. I totally agree. On trail, you know, use leave no trace tenants. Mm-hmm. Stay on the trails. Don't use the bathroom on the side of the trails. You know, all those good things. So please, those are disclaimers that we would hope that you are good stewards of the land.
Yeah. And speaking of being good stewards, we went to Cottonwood Canyon State Park in search of wildflowers. Not great a super bloom.
Great segue.
But, and we stayed on trail. So
We had 2 days off.
Yes.
Of our full-time job as running a family hotel. And we were like, let's go look for a bloom. And let's
find some wildflowers.
Yeah. And it's a little early in the spring to go find wildflowers. But I found this Oregon wildflower website, Facebook page that, oh my gosh, there's thousands of people. And it's such great information mm-hmm. that all these folks have to share about wildflowers. So that was a really cool resource to run upon. But one of the places that currently had blooms at the time we were going out was mm-hmm. Cottonwood Canyon State Park.
Yeah. So we've known about Cottonwood Canyon for a while. So it opened the year that we got married. It opened September 2013, which I was Googling it and I was like, oh, because I remember being aware of it going to open before we left and started our grand adventure around the country. But I didn't know that it was like, right. It was like that year.
Well, okay. So part of that's my fault because
it is definitely your
fault.
Well,
I mean, thanks. If any of you have worked in like a corporate-ish setting, like you get into this corporate culture and like you get really excited about things that like don't mean anything to anybody else in the whole entire world. And you know, like there's all these people that you think are really famous that are just like, you know, high up in the organization. You're like, I hope they know my name. Anyways, the state parks are just like that. Or at least for me, it was just like that working in state parks. And so Cottonwood Canyon was coming forward when I was working for the state parks in Oregon. And so I was getting all this buzz about it. So I was really excited about it. And I was really into like the state park culture.
Yeah.
So anyways, it might not have been a huge deal to anyone else but me.
But I don't know. But anyways, it was.
Yes, that's the case.
In 2013 it opened. It's the second largest state park in Oregon, which I'm surprised. That surprised me. So the largest state park in Oregon is Silver Falls, which is south of Salem. It's just outside of Silverton. And it's like an area that would make sense for development in general, besides that it's so rock. It's kind of up and down, really topographical. But it would make, to me, it would make sense for development, but somehow,
just because Salem is such a big area.
There's large centers and there's farming nearby. It kind of seems like an area that, why didn't that get developed?
Because
the state parks got it early.
Yeah.
They, for whatever reason, however it came about, I didn't do any research on Silver Falls about that.
I'm sure it's because of the waterfalls.
Looking at Cottonwood Canyon, but it probably is about the waterfalls. But state parks must have gotten it relatively early on in the history of the state. And it's been conserved, and it's like 9,000 acres of area that is just like preserved in an area that's relatively developed all around it. There's farmland, there's cities, there's all sorts of stuff around it, but it's super cool. That's the biggest state park. Cottonwood Canyon, where we went for wildflowers, is the second largest state park, and it's way out in like central eastern Oregon.
Yeah.
So it's an area that I would think would have the largest state park because there's just a lot of empty land.
Yeah.
But then there's also other types of land. There's a lot of BLM land, Bureau of Land Management, and there's some other federal entities that own property out there that kind of make it contiguous public lands, but the state park is only one portion of those public lands. So I guess that makes sense, but I just thought that was really interesting that it was just so... It wasn't as large as I thought it was going to be because of that. Because the BLM land is around... The BLM land was like 10,000 acres.
Yeah, BLM...
But that particular plot was like 10,000 acres around the state park. So anyways, this park, pretty cool, has a bunch of primitive camping sites. Their website, or not their website, but anytime you Google it, all it says is about the primitive camping sites. But they also have rustic cabins, which is basically just a cabin. I think it's got heat, but that's it. It's like got a little cadet heater and then nothing else. So it's you don't have to bring a whole bunch of gear to go camping. You can just... bring a sleeping bag and go in there and rent the rest of the cabin. And there you go.
So which I kind of wish we would have done.
I know. I wish we would have. I didn't realize it because I hadn't actually looked at their website, which it's not anywhere except for on their actual website. For some reason, Wikipedia doesn't mention it. And then all the hiking guides for that area don't mention anything about the rustic cabins. They only mention the primitive camping.
I mean, I would have been up for camping, but all of our stuff is all packed away for the winter. That just like we didn't have enough notice to like get it all out and you know make sure we had everything and like food.
If we would have known though, if I would have done some more research on the actual website for the state park and we saw the rustic cabins, we could have rented one. I think we could have made it work.
Yeah,
but we didn't. We saw them. it's a really nice park. It was built in 2013. It was open in 2013. So the facilities in general are pretty new.
Yeah, they have like a really nice. Like nature center.
Yeah, there was like an interpretive nature center.
It's along the John Day River, which is just really scenic, and you know, kind of had some swift areas, but other than that, it was like really kind of just plonking along next to the campsites. It actually reminded me a lot of where we went birding in Scotland.
Oh, up in it the did kind of yeah,
not as cold, but
yeah, and not as green.
No, not as green.
Not as green as that.
It was like you know this river in the middle of a valley.
Yeah.
With a lot of, like, scrubby, sagey stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we drove straight from the beach all the way out to it. So we got there in, like, late afternoon?
Yeah.
Or so?
Our checklist started at 3.
At 3 o'clock? Okay, yeah. So we drove straight from work all the way out to there. And we were like, well, we really wanted to get out of the car and get hiking. So we eeny, meeny, miny, moe and picked the Hardstone Trail, which heads south out of the campground.
It looked the flattest.
Like, visually, it looked the flattest, but then, like, once we were going and I was looking at the trail maps, it's like, oh, no, they're all pretty much flat.
Yeah, but
one of them's called Pinnacles Trail.
We saw some girls hike up, the hillside, and I was like, I don't want to do that.
I think they were literally just going backcountry. Yeah, they were just going for it. But we just eeny, meeny, miny, moe, chose the Hardstone Trail, which heads south. It's, like, a mile and a half long trail, but it leads straight into more public lands outside of the state park. So I'm unclear exactly how far the trail will continue, but it looks like it basically follows the river as far as you want.
Everything that I read said 3.2 miles.
3.2 miles?
Yeah.
Okay.
One way, 3.2 miles.
Okay.
But we didn't go that
far. No, we didn't go that far. No, we ended up going just under 2 miles out and then turned around and came back.
Yeah, so we decided to just take a chance and go on that trail, which had some pretty good birding along the way. There were, you know, stuff in the river, mallards, mergansers, and there was a cliff face on the opposite side of the river than we were, and there were all of these raptors, like, popping up here and there every once in a while, and it started off with these harriers that were real low, just flying right above kind of the marshy stuff along the side of the river.
Yeah.
And just swirling higher and higher. And that was really exciting to watch the harriers because there was the female. There was a gray ghost.
Yeah, there was a gray ghost. Which is exciting. Yeah. That was super cool. Well, and also the bighorn sheep that were hanging out along that cliffside, or that, not a cliffside, it was more of a hillside. But all along that, there was probably 30 of them. They were just kind of dotting the whole landscape. So that was super cool seeing a bunch of bighorn sheep with the Harrier's flying in front of them, and the Merganser's coming real close right past us. So really interesting wildlife right off the bat within like 5 minutes of starting down the trail. I was like, oh, this is a good idea. Let's keep going this way.
Well, and as I wanted to see wildflowers, I was really trying to focus on that and look at the vegetation.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm just so jaded in things. Like, you know, one of the big things that we have in Oregon are tulip farms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gorgeous. That's another, like, influencer bait is those tulip farms, because they're so pretty. Just all these lines of tulips. But anyways, those end up being, like, what, 2.5 feet tall?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've got that. Like, I've seen wildflowers before. It's not like I have no experience in this.
Yeah.
But I kept expecting to see large plants with, you know, gorgeous flowers on them.
Yeah.
And then it took me a little while hiking down the trail to realize, oh, no, these are really small. And because I had been seeing pictures on Facebook of them and people have zoomed way in.
Yeah, they're using macro lenses to take photos of these.
Yeah.
They're super cool looking flowers, little purple flowers and blue.
You know, we had to look into it to find out the IDs on it because we're not super knowledgeable about wildflowers. But we had longleaf phlox, which were these really cute little pink flowers.
So tiny. This half the size of your pinky nail.
Yeah. And then common woolly sunflower, which... like, it's such a goofy name. But it was, they were just these little tiny sunflowers in clusters. And then these really delicate little blue-eyed Marys, which almost remind me of wood violets. Not nearly the color or anything, but kind of the shape.
Mm-hmm.
And just little tiny things. They're so cute.
Yeah. No, it's, we just wanted to go and look at wildflowers for a day.
Yeah. And so... It really took me a few minutes to figure out, like, no, they're going to be really tiny little flowers. And so I had to get down and, you know, actually look at the ground cover to see what these things were.
Yeah, it's a different eye focus from staring at raptors in the sky to looking at wildflowers on the ground.
You just turn your binoculars around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I should do that. So we kept walking a little further, and we came across a woman who was hiking towards us. And our first question was, have you seen any birds? and what birds have you seen? And she kind of listed out, there was some willows up ahead that, or maybe they were cottonwoods, whatever it was. She said that it was just up ahead. And there was some kinglets and some other stuff hanging out in it. And then Hannah was like, what about wildflowers? Are there wildflowers up around? And she gave us a description of, somebody's folly. It was, she listed, it was a person's name.
It was like Bertram's folly.
Something like that. And she was like, you know where that's at, right? And we were like, we have no idea.
Explain
and she,
it to me.
Just give us some context clues of what it's going to look like. And she's like, oh, it goes up here, goes to the left, and then you'll see a big rock face. When you hit the solid granite, where the granite meets the river, that's where it's at. It's like, okay, that makes sense. We can get behind that.
I got to tell you, though, we've scoured these maps over the last, like, 2 days, have not found a name that's similar to that.
No.
In any of these maps.
I think she might have just made it up.
Maybe
she was testing us.
yeah, of course I know.
Well, of course I know all about that. Yeah, no, I have no idea what she said. I think it was somebody's folly. Is some person's name folly, but yeah, we parted ways with her and continued down the trail.
Well, she did warn us about snakes.
Oh, she did warn us about snakes, which...
We didn't see any snakes, but if you look at all trails on that trail, everybody talks about lots of snakes.
Everybody talks about snakes. And we never, the whole hike, didn't see a single one.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointed. I'd like to see one.
So right where we met her was where it turned into hunting property.
Yeah.
And I imagine BLM land or arrangement with state parks. So there's
I think it's an arrangement of the state parks because it's kind of a heads up on the state park website that the undeveloped areas of trails hunting is permitted.
Yeah. So kept on going and got to those cottonwoods that Eric was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, kinglets, like, wild and bush tits all over the place.
Ruby crowned and golden crowned, and they were just like in our faces. They were kind of bothering each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to take some photos, and then the shutter, the of the shutter on the camera, they were like, oh. So apparently not very many people go and pish at them because they were very interested in that all of a sudden. They just, both Ruby and Golden Crown Kinglets came over and they were like trying to like tell me what's up the whole time. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what's up.
As I'm taking photos of them. Yeah, it was very interesting.
And then we got up to that, like, basalt wall mm-hmm. that met the river, and that was where the magpies were flying back and forth.
Yeah, whole group of black-billed magpies.
I love seeing magpies. They're so neat. I'm sure if we lived in an area with, like, a lot of magpies, we would not say that.
But... Well, it's just like Stellar's Jays. Like,
I know.
I've become really jaded about Stellar's Jays. And
you have?
I know, but I still like feeding them. Still like throwing peanuts to dragon.
Yep.
But they're just another corvid.
I know.
Doing some interesting corvid stuff.
I know, but we just see them so infrequently. Yeah. It's like really exciting.
Oh, it is, yeah. Yeah, so black-billed magpies going by, and this is about where the gal was describing this is where the wildflowers are, and lo and behold, we found some wildflowers.
Yeah, so there was a whole hillside, which was part of there was a wildfire burn in mm-hmm. that section in 2023. And the whole hillside was full of little tiny wildflowers,
yeah.
which were absolutely gorgeous.
It was like all yellow, this whole hill of yellow.
Yeah. And lots of little white ones too and everything. But it still was really early. So I imagine it's going to get much
fuller. Oh, it probably is going to get more exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
As the season goes on.
It was so exciting to finally find the wildflowers.
Yes. And along with the wildflowers, there's a bunch of chuckers. And they were calling and calling and calling. And chuckers have been introduced to Oregon and Washington for hunters. But I think that's the first time I've seen one in Oregon in the wild.
That's the first U.S. one that I've seen.
Is it the first U.S. one?
Yeah. The only time I've seen chuckers before that was in Israel.
Was in Israel, yeah. I think you're right with me too, yeah. Yeah, but it was like, well, this is interesting. It's an Oregon lifer.
Well, and it was really cool to see them because, like, we're in the middle, you know, we're by the river in this canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the time of evening where they start calling, you know, to establish territories and find mates and all that.
Yeah.
And they were calling, but we could not find them. We probably spent like 20 or 30 minutes trying to find one.
So long.
Because
and it was getting colder and the wind was starting to kick up and the sun had dropped below the top of the hills.
Yeah.
And because we're in this canyon, all of a sudden the temperature is just plummeting. And it's like, man, I'm wearing t-shirt and shorts. And it's like, let's hurry up and get out of here. But they're calling, but so I didn't want to give up.
Yeah, but it was reverberating throughout the canyon.
Oh, yeah, everywhere.
And so we couldn't find them. It took us a long time to mm-hmm. to finally
visualize one. Yeah. Yeah, but it was really fun on the way out after spending so 30 minutes looking for trying to get on these chuckers. We ended up coming across a flock of Townsend solitaires.
Yeah, there was like six or seven of them.
I've never seen, like, especially for a bird named solitaire, the biggest group I've ever seen of a bird with a solitaire in its name is like two. And I think that's solitary sandpiper. I've seen like small groupings of those.
I don't know if that counts.
I don't know if that counts, but yeah, Townsend solitaire. I've only seen one at a time ever, anywhere we've ever seen them. And so it was just really interesting to have like six of them.
Yeah.
Like they were all kind of independent-ish, but they were grouped together doing a thing. So that was fascinating. So that was basically it. That's as much as I could take. I was getting a little chilly.
Well,
I was hungry.
So I did want to mention about Cottonwood Canyon too, as a dark sky location.
Yeah.
And if you want to check out dark sky locations, there's great resources and websites for that. But that is one of the main reasons why I'd want to go back there. I mean, it's a fabulous park. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to see. Camping there, I can imagine.
Lots of hiking.
Would be wonderful. But I really want to go experience the dark sky. And, you know, we didn't miss a whole lot when we were there because it was March and it was overcast all day long while we were out there. So we had probably zero chance of having a good dark sky that night anyways.
Yeah.
But I think that would be such an incredible experience to be out there because there you're not going to have any lights other than other campers and their cars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You would definitely have a dark sky
out
there. So rather than stay and look at the dark sky there, since it really wasn't much of a chance, we decided we're going to head back into Hood River. We were kind of far out there, but we headed back into Hood River for the night.
Which is one of the bigger towns on the way back to Portland.
Biggest, closest town, or closest big town to Cottonwood Canyon, basically. I think there's some other smaller.
There's the Dalles.
I guess the Dalles is closer. Anyways.
Hood River is becoming more and more popular as a tourist destination.
It is.
And we've really never spent much time there. And so we kind of wanted to check it out because they're experiencing a lot of the same tourism related issues that we're experiencing in our community.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to, you know, like.
We wanted to go tourist them.
Yeah, basically. Which I did feel like a super tourist when we were there.
Oh, definitely did. But we stayed at the super cool hotel, the historic Hood River Hotel, which kind it I think it made it they make themselves seem older than it is.
Yeah.
Because online it looked like it was opened originally in 1919.
Oh.
Which
that's not that old.
It's not that's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, I mean, it's old, but it's not.
It's old that for the old. U.S. It's old for like Oregon.
It's old for Oregon, but it's not really like that old. Old,
but they had.
But one it of seemed those, older than that.
But they had one of those elevators classic. That was more of a lift.
Oh yeah, it was definitely a classic lift with like you had the door that closed on the outside, and then you had like a sliding brass door inside that goes, shh, and then you have like mechanical buttons that you click, and then all of a sudden the thing goes up. And the whole thing rattles and feels like it's going to fall down the whole time. But it's pretty cool. And because it's a historic hotel, so there isn't really any parking on site. There's street parking, which you can only park for free after a certain hour in the evening. And then you have to leave by a certain time in the morning. Which was fine with us because we got in late and then we were leaving early. So it wasn't that big a deal. But you can park at the...
At the Mount Hood Railroad.
At the train station, they have parking. You can park overnight. And it's like, I think it's a patrolled parking lot for like $20 or something for the night.
And we haven't gone on the Mount Hood Railroad, but I bought that for my parents for their birthdays last year. Mm-hmm. And they went and they seemed to have a good time. It takes you like apple orchards and stuff.
That's fun.
Because that whole part of Oregon is called the Fruit Loop.
The Fruit Loop.
That's where there's orchards.
Yeah, lots of fruit being grown in that
Many
area.
Different types of apples.
Yeah, the soil is really rich with nutrients and stuff because it's like volcanic, and then it gets lots of rain, and there's also lots of sun. So it's kind of a really good thing to grow lots of stuff in that area in Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's productive.
So, it's productive.
So anyways, it was a nice hotel. They had a breakfast restaurant downstairs, mm-hmm. but nothing for us for dinner. So we, of course, had to do a little bar hopping.
Yeah. So we went to Full Sail Brewery. We got some apps. We got some drinks. We had a big giant pile of fries and then some buffalo wings.
And it was right on the river, so we got to eat and check out the river.
Yeah.
And then we went over to Double Mountain Brewery, which was kind of fun. It was, I don't know, it looked like a German, like, beer house inside.
It did kind of seem like a German beer house, right?
Yeah, and we got more food and some more drinks. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, toasted to our lifer U.S. chooker.
Yeah, you gotta come up with a reason to toast, right?
That's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next morning we stopped by a little coffee shop that was right around the corner called Ground Espresso Bar and Cafe to just like get some coffee and like a breakfast sandwich.
Yeah.
And
it seemed like it was a spot for regulars to hang out.
Okay. So this is the thing.
But like, also like tourists.
I know, but this is the thing because we're like sitting there eating and listening to the conversation that was going on behind us about like fishing and, you know, about like, hey, we went out to England Marine this week and got some stuff to go crabbing and what's the best crab bait, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, this is exactly how I feel in my community when I'm sitting at like a restaurant and just talking and having a normal conversation. And then like the tourists all around me, like, what do they think? What are they thinking about? You know, it's the come watch the locals kind of thing. And I was guilty of it.
I was minding my own business, eating my tuna sandwich.
You listened in about the crabbing because you wanted to jump in and tell them the best crab bait.
Oh, they had a whole... One guy had no idea. He had never used chicken before in his entire life until this time going out or something. So it was like, really? I've only ever used chicken.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. So I did want to jump into that part of the conversation, but also I was confused because I don't think you go crabbing that far up river. So I think he was talking about crabbing out at the beach, like 2 hours away or 3 hours away. So I had a hard time following the conversation, but I was mostly minding my own business, eating my tuna sandwich.
Well, you don't talk in restaurants, so I need to entertain myself somehow. So we decided to go find some more wildflowers.
Yes, we did not have our fill yet.
Yeah, and everyone has talked to us about going to Dog Mountain.
And they've given us warnings, too.
Yeah, which is in Washington, just across the border a little bit. And we've heard that it's quite a challenge and didn't know much more about it than that, other than that's the place to see wildflowers in the spring in Oregon and Washington. So, we started in on that trail.
Yeah, so we hiked up and suddenly, very, very steep.
Yes.
Lots of switchbacks. It was quite the hike. the whole beginning portion of it is kind of through like an old growthy style of like spruce and Doug firs and stuff like that growing. And it was the really deep forest birds that you expect for that. So like a lot of the things that we get in Cannon Beach, varied thrushes, Steller's jays, chickadees, kinglets, all those normal sorts of things that we expect to see at home. So it was kind of nice seeing these guys in Skamania County, Washington.
Yeah.
But nothing that interesting bird-wise on the way up, but it was kind of foggy and everything. We're hiking, and we were both sweating. Like huffing and puffing our way up this hill, and we finally get to like a fork, and we're like, okay, cool.
Oh, wait, so before that, though, that's where we found the wildflowers.
Oh, we did find a bunch of really cool wildflowers.
So before we got up to the fork in the road, mm-hmm. there were some wildflowers in there.
Yeah, completely. I don't know why I just skipped straight.
You forgot what we were even talking about here.
I'm just trying to talk about the hiking and the birds. so we saw a whole bunch. There was like this like partial like old landslide, not like recent at all, like an old landslide where the trees were opened up, and so there's sunlight made it all the way to the ground, and that mm-hmm. area that had sunlight all the way to the ground was full of these little tiny wildflowers, like kind of all over the place. And we took a bunch of little small clips of videos and like little pictures of them. I'm not a wildflower expert, but we used some guides online. We found a couple things. One of them, which looked super cool, was a small flowered woodland star, mm-hmm. and it's like looks like these little starbursts.
Yeah,
psh, 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 like
well, they're like really delicate little white flowers. Oh yeah, it's
tiny, and well, they're not super tiny, I guess. They're like a half inch or so.
Yeah.
Like three centimeters, 4 centimeters, like across. So they're not tiny, tiny flowers, but they're pretty small. And you just get up close, and while you're looking at them up close, you're like, oh, these look like a little starburst right in your face.
Well, and there was a species that I can pick out of a lineup no matter what, lupin.
Yeah.
There weren't any lupin flowers, though, but the leaves were
coming up. Yeah, yeah. And then this other one, I don't know what... I'm kind of curious about. I guess I probably should have looked up the etymology of it too. But the Pacific Hound's Tongue.
Man, the names of all of these wildflowers are so interesting.
Yeah, they're. I find like taxonomic like groupings of stuff interesting. Like birds, we're familiar. That's what we study birds. We look at birds. We're very familiar with. Who and what is naming things this and that, but flowers is a complete mystery to me. Trees, complete mystery to me as to how these things are coming together. Mammals too, like you have like the Guadalupe fur seal versus the northern fur seals. Like you have these different subspecies. Yeah, it's just a complete mystery to me. these other taxonomic orders.
You need to get out of birds and start looking at other things.
Looking at other stuff. I know. That's always my resolution every year, and I never end up doing it.
So we got up to the fork in the road, which had Eric's probably favorite sign that he's ever seen.
Yeah. The difficult trail to the right, more difficult trail to the left. So we had our options.
Which was like kind of confusing because the more difficult trail looked flat from where we were, but the difficult trail went up immediately.
The more difficult wasn't just flat. It was actually downhill.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, if I go to the left here, it's going to go downhill.
It's because you're going to have to come back up to the point we were at.
I guess. It's just up and down and up and down. Yeah. But so we decided to go to just the difficult side. We did not make it that much further. Not because of the difficulty, though. It was because the rain started coming in.
Yeah.
And it was just barely drizzly, but I had a major concern that the trail is pretty steep. Even though it was switchbacks, it was still a pretty steep trail. And I was kind of concerned, what happens if it actually starts raining and the ground gets wet and we're trying to walk back down this? And I was like, I don't know if it's worth it. We don't have sticks. We don't have...
You've helped enough people... that have injured themselves hiking.
So many people. And then the first responders that have to come out and carry you out because you have a broken ankle.
And they hike up 2 miles to get to you?
Exactly. And I've been that hiker that has to hike in to
EMT.
I've been the EMT that has to hike in to haul somebody out that broke their ankle because they went past their abilities. And we didn't have hiking poles. We didn't have any of that stuff, trekking poles or anything like that. So it was like, rather than... slipping and falling and hurting ourselves, let's just turn around before the ground gets wet. And luckily we did, because like we were getting to the car when the rain actually started, rain. So I was like, okay, well, good call turning around. We did not get up to the big clearing up at the big scenic overlook,
but we asked some hikers that were coming down, and they said that there wasn't anything.
Yeah, they made it seem like it wasn't really worth the risk. So I was like, well, we have two things. It's raining and these other hikers coming down said it's probably not worth it. Which it might have been cool. They might not have been looking at the little flowers like what we were looking at, but we decided that's better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a broken ankle.
Me neither. So from there, we went to an old haunt called Steigerwald National Wildlife Refuge.
It has been a long time since I've been there.
Yeah, which was, it's just outside of Vancouver, Washington. But it was on the way back from where we were headed. Mm-hmm. And that is such a cool spot. The first time we ever went there, we had like six pairs of American bitterns like flying around.
So many flying and calling. And yeah. Just, I think that was like my first real experience with American bitterns. And I've been ruined. For American bitterns ever since.
Well, and we also had a pileated woodpecker that day, like tapping on a dead log.
Yeah, just eating along a log, yeah.
Yeah, so it was really cool to go back there. And it wasn't as nearly as exciting as the first time we were out there. They've had a huge fire, so it's really getting renewed from that. Because there aren't nearly as many trees. And
yeah, there was an area that you could tell obviously had enough water that the wildfire did not affect it or it didn't burn everything down. But it was pretty clear most of the park had been affected pretty heavily by that wildfire. And I think it was just a couple of years ago when like all of Oregon and Washington were on fire. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the areas that was on fire, Steigerwald National Wildlife Refuge. So there was a little pond area that's where the pileated was last time we were there. There was no pileated this time, but lots of deer. Lots of deer hanging around.
Well, and for the like 2 hours we were there, we had 41 species. We mm-hmm. had, you know,
it wasn't not birdie. There was lots of birds. And there was lots of exciting birds, mostly
lots
ducks,
of waterfowl.
Yeah, mostly waterfowl, handful of hawks and a couple of eagles, I think. And
you had downy and hairy woodpeckers and flickers.
And flickers, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really good spot, and it's nice because it's just right outside of the metro area of mm-hmm. Vancouver, and it's along the Columbia, mm-hmm. and so you get a lot of opportunities like hike right there, and there were people biking and hiking and walking dogs, so
yeah,
it was really nice.
I think there's a biking trail that connects
I think
there
was a city park
all the
right
way through. Yeah, well, I think it connects all the way back through the next town and everything. Like you can like ride along the river, basically. So there's a lot of people that were riding along what was like the riverfront trail. Like it looked like it was a differently developed trail than the National Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great shortish walk, easy, flat. Most of it's flat. It's like a lot of National Wildlife Refuges that don't have driving loops. There's a lot of just flat crushed granite trail mm-hmm. that's just easy to walk, ADA accessible. You could take a wheelchair on it, no problem. And see lots and lots of birds.
Yeah, so it was, you know, we went out and we looked for wildflowers. We saw a couple, mm-hmm. But that really kind of like whet my appetite for seeing wildflowers. Like we had those ones that we mentioned at Dog Mountain, the small flowered woodland star, the lupin, the Pacific houndstooth.
Among many others.
Houndstongue.
Houndstongue.
And at Cottonwood Canyon, most of it was like longleaf phlox, common woolly sunflower, blue-eyed Marys. There's so much to know about wildflowers, and there's a lot of resources, which is nice. But, you know, it's fun looking at those versus birds because, like, the birds are wonderful and beautiful, and I love them, but they fly away. And for the most part, like, you know, you can see you can get a much better look at these wildflowers. Of course, you do have to be real careful around them so you don't crush them or anything. Mm-hmm. But even on our drive, you know, up to Portland today, like I was noticing trillium, like
I know the
on
trillium,
the road.
Trillium just opened though. Like they weren't open when we drove up.
I know,
a couple
but I
weeks ago,
if we hadn't been thinking about the wildflowers from doing this episode, I don't think I would have noticed them.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, just look wherever you are for the wildflowers that are coming up in your area.
Yeah, because it's the time of year.
Yeah.
It's the time of year for them.
Yeah, and I want to see more. We just saw the early spring wildflowers. I want to see
more flowers. Well, anyways, thank you guys all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and or learned something new. Please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, anywhere else you listen to us. If you'd like to connect with us on the socials, you can follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram. You can follow our Facebook page at Hannah and Eric Go Birding, our Twitter at We Go Birding, our TikTok at Hannah and Eric Go Birding. Pretty much anything is Hannah and Eric or Hannah or Eric Go Birding. or Hannah and Eric Who Are Burning. All of it together. Just all those together, kind of a mix, gets us on the socials. Also, our website, www.gobirdingpodcast. You can tell us what you think and share the love of birding with your friends.